Hello, my fellow Americans. My name is David, and this is the American Cyanide Show, where freedom has a voice and the left can suck it. This is the episode for Federalist Number 9, an episode that has been a long, long time coming. I was supposed to be doing these every week. Once again, life has interfered with my plans to have these shows out every week. But better late than never, right? So, Federalist Number 9 has to deal with the Union as a safeguard against domestic faction and insurrection. Basically, Alexander Hamilton is proposing that in order to limit the amount of trouble that a country can get into, it is better for there to be one nation in a particular area, as opposed to having separate entities that could get into conflict with one another, as the countries in Europe did for centuries. This is not a new argument that Alexander is making. In fact, he's been doing it for like the last, what, six papers or so? So in this particular case, though, he focuses on a political scientist by the name of Montesquieu. He was a French political scientist that the opposition to the Union was using to justify their opposition, basically to say, look, let's not form a federal government. Let's just be separate states. And what Alexander Hamilton does in Federalist 9 is he points out that the opposition is basically taking what Montesquieu said out of context and shows where Montesquieu is actually in support of a confederacy or a federal government, if you will, basically a union of states. So he corrects the record there on in Federalist 9. It's a pretty straightforward argument. He doesn't necessarily go into the specifics as to how it would prevent insurrection and factions, as the title suggests. But if you think about it, if you've listened to the previous Federalist Papers, they've already, you know, both he and John Jay have already done that ad nauseum as to how a union is going to prevent, you know, wars and is basically going to keep the peace. This is going to include insurrections. He does give an example later on in the paper as to how it's going to help. So keep an eye out for that. But for the most part, what he does is he takes the time to correct the record, like I said, with how Montesquieu was being misquoted or being taken out of context, which is actually one of the things that I'm going to talk about at the close. What I normally do, if this is the first episode you're listening to, as far as like the Federalist series is concerned, one of the things that I do is I go through each one of the papers as I read them, and I highlight portions for myself that I consider to be times change, people don't moments. Basically, things that Alexander Hamilton was dealing with back then that we are basically dealing with today, because people don't change. There are certain behaviors that happen that happen through the years. And if you go back to and listen to Federalist 1 through 8, you'll find several examples of that. And in Federalist Number 9, as just like always, there are those phrases that are very applicable to today, in particular, where the opposition is taking something out of context to support their argument, which if you take something out of context to support your argument, you're not really supporting your argument with anything. So anyway, I'll leave that for the close. So again, if you're new listening to this podcast, fantastic. Thank you very much for joining. Feel free to subscribe to the podcast so you can get notified when a new episode comes out, whether, you know, it takes a week or two, three, four, five, 6 weeks, however long it takes, you will be notified when I finally get around to recording a new episode. In any case, enough jibber jabber. Let's get to the good stuff. So here it is, Federalist number 9. Be on the lookout for those times change, people don't moments. I will give you mine at the end. Feel free to email me with yours. I'll give the details and everything at the close. So, like I said, enough jibber jabber. Darn it. Federalist number 9. Enjoy. Federalist number 9. The Union as a safeguard against domestic faction and insurrection. For the Independent Journal. Alexander Hamilton. To the people of the state of New York, a firm union will be of the utmost moment to the peace and liberty of the states, as a barrier against domestic faction and insurrection. It is impossible to read the history of the petty republics of Greece and Italy without feeling sensations of horror and disgust at the distractions with which they were continually agitated, and at the rapid succession of revolutions by which they were kept in a state of perpetual vibration between the extremes of tyranny and anarchy. If they exhibit occasional calms, these only serve as short-lived contrast to the furious storms that are to succeed. If now and then intervals of felicity open to view, we behold them with a mixture of regret, arising from the reflection that the pleasing scenes before us are soon to be overwhelmed by the tempestuous waves of sedition and party rage. If momentary rays of glory break forth from the gloom, while they dazzle us with a transient and fleeting brilliancy, they at the same time admonish us to lament that the vices of government should pervert the direction and tarnish the luster of those bright talents and exalted endowments for which the favored soils that produce them have been so justly celebrated. From the disorders that disfigure the annals of those republics, the advocates of despotism have drawn arguments not only against the forms of republican government, but against the very principles of civil liberty. They have decried all free government as inconsistent with the order of society, and have indulged themselves in malicious exultation over its friends and partisans. Happily for mankind, stupendous fabrics reared on the basis of liberty, which have flourished for ages, have in a few glorious instances refuted their gloomy sophisms. And I trust America will be the broad and solid foundation of other edifices, not less magnificent, which will be equally permanent monuments of their errors. But it is not to be denied that the portraits they have sketched of republican government were too just copies of the originals from which they were taken. If it had been found impracticable to have devised models of a more perfect structure, the enlightened friends to liberty would have been obliged to abandon the cause of that species of government as indefensible. The science of politics, however, like most other sciences, has received great improvement. The efficacy of various principles is now well understood, which were either not known at all or imperfectly known to the ancients. The regular distribution of power into distinct departments, the introduction of legislative balances and checks, the institution of courts composed of judges holding their offices during good behavior, the representation of the people in the legislature by deputies of their own election, these are wholly new discoveries, or have made their principal progress towards perfection in modern times. They are means, and powerful means, by which the excellences of republican government may be retained and its imperfections lessened or avoided. To this catalogue of circumstances that tend to the amelioration of popular systems of civil government, I shall venture, however novel it may appear to some, to add one more on a principle which has been made the foundation of an objection to the new Constitution. I mean the enlargement of the orbit within which such systems are to revolve, either in respect to the dimensions of a single state or to the consolidation of several smaller states into one great confederacy. The latter is that which immediately concerns the object under consideration. It will, however, be of use to examine the principle in its application to a single state, which shall be attended to in another place. The utility of the confederacy, as well to suppress faction and to guard the internal tranquility of states, as to increase their external force and security, is in reality not a new idea. It has been practiced upon in different countries and ages, and has received the sanction of the most approved writers on the subject of politics. The opponents of the plan proposed have, with great assiduity, cited and circulated the observations of Montesquieu on the necessity of a contracted territory for a republican government. But they seem not to have been apprised of the sentiments of that great man expressed in another part of his work, nor to have adverted to the consequences of the principle to which they subscribe with such ready acquiescence. When Montesquieu recommends a small extent for republics, The standards he had in view were of dimensions far short of the limits of almost every one of these states. Neither Virginia, Massachusetts, Pennsylvania, New York, North Carolina, nor Georgia can by any means be compared with the models from which he reasoned and to which the terms of his description apply. If we therefore take his ideas on this point as the criterion of truth, we shall be driven to the alternative either of taking refuge at once in the arms of monarchy, or of splitting ourselves into an infinity of little, jealous, clashing, tumultuous commonwealths, the wretched nurseries of unceasing discord, and the miserable objects of universal pity or contempt. Some of the writers who have come forward on the other side of the question seem to have been aware of the dilemma, and have been bold enough to hint at the division of the larger states as a desirable thing. Such an infatuated policy, such a desperate expedient might, by the multiplication of petty offices, answer the views of men who possess not qualifications to extend their influence beyond the narrow circles of personal intrigue, but it could never promote the greatness or happiness of the people of America. Referring the examination of the principle itself to another place, as has been already mentioned, it will be sufficient to remark here that, in the sense of the author who has been most emphatically quoted upon the occasion, it would only dictate a reduction of the size of the more considerable members of the Union, but would not militate against their being all comprehended in one Confederate government. And this is the true question in the discussion of which we are at present interested. So far are the suggestions of Montesquieu from standing in opposition to a general union of the states, that he explicitly treats of a Confederate Republic as the expedient for extending the sphere of popular government, and reconciling the advantages of monarchy with those of republicanism. It is very probable, says he, quote, that mankind would have been obliged at length to live constantly under the government of a single person, had they not contrived a kind of constitution that has all the internal advantages of a republican, together with the external force of a monarchical government, I mean a Confederate Republic. This form of government is a convention by which several smaller states agree to become members of a larger one, which they intend to form. It is a kind of assemblage of societies that constitute a new one, capable of increasing by means of new associations till they arrive to such a degree of power as to be able to provide for the security of the united body. A republic of this kind, able to withstand an external force, may support itself without any internal corruptions. The form of this society prevents all manner of inconveniences. If a single member should attempt to usurp the supreme authority, he could not be supposed to have an equal authority and credit in all the Confederate states. Were he to have too great influence over one, this would alarm the rest. Were he to subdue a part, that which would still remain free might oppose him with forces independent of those which he had usurped and overpower him before he could be settled in his usurpation. Should a popular insurrection happen in one of the Confederate states, the others are able to quell it. Should abuses creep into one part, they are reformed by those that remain sound. The state may be destroyed on one side and not on the other. The Confederacy may be dissolved, and the Confederates preserve their sovereignty. As this government is composed of small republics, it enjoys the internal happiness of each, and with respect to its external situation, it is possessed, by means of the association, of all the advantages of large monarchies. End of quote. I have thought it proper to quote at length these interesting passages, because they contain a luminous abridgment of the principal arguments in favor of the Union, and must effectually remove the false impressions which a misapplication of other parts of the work was calculated to make. They have at the same time an intimate connection with the more immediate design of this paper, which is to illustrate the tendency of the Union to repress domestic faction and insurrection. A distinction, more subtle than accurate, has been raised between a confederacy and a consolidation of the states. The essential characteristic of the first is said to be the restriction of its authority to the members in their collective capacities without reaching to the individuals of whom they are composed. It is contended that the National Council ought to have no concern with any object of internal administration. An exact equality of suffrage between the members has also been insisted upon as a leading feature of a Confederate government. These positions are, in the main, arbitrary. They are supported neither by principle nor precedent. It has indeed happened that governments of this kind have generally operated in the manner which the distinction taken notice of supposes to be inherent in their nature. But there have been, in most of them, extensive exceptions to the practice, which serve to prove, as far as example will go, that there is no absolute rule on the subject. and it will be clearly shown in the course of this investigation that as far as the principle contended for has prevailed, it has been the cause of incurable disorder and imbecility in the government. The definition of a confederate republic seems simply to be an assemblage of societies, or an association of two or more states into one state. The extent, modifications, and objects of the federal authority are mere matters of discretion. So long as the separate organization of the members be not abolished, so long as it exists by a constitutional necessity for local purposes, though it should be in perfect subordination to the general authority of the Union, it would still be, in fact and in theory, an association of states or a confederacy. The proposed constitution, so far from implying an abolition of the state governments, makes them constituent parts of the national sovereignty by allowing them a direct representation in the Senate, and leaves in their possession certain exclusive and very important portions of sovereign power. This fully corresponds, in every rational import of the terms, with the idea of a federal government. In the Lycian Confederacy, which consisted of 23 cities, or republics, the largest were entitled to 3 votes in the common council, those of the middle class 2, and the smallest to 1. The common council had the appointment of all the judges and magistrates of the respective cities. This was certainly the most delicate species of interference in their internal administration. For if there be anything that seems exclusively appropriated to the local jurisdictions, it is the appointment of their own officers. Yet Montesquieu, speaking of this association, says, quote, "Were I to give a model of an excellent confederate republic, it would be that of Lycia." End of quote. Thus we perceive that the distinctions insisted upon were not within the contemplation of this enlightened civilian, and we shall be led to conclude that they are the novel refinements of an erroneous theory. All right, so that was Federalist number 9. I hope you enjoyed my reading of it. I had fun recording it as well. This one was actually a lot easier than my previous episodes. I didn't have as many starts and stops and whatnot. So, and for not having done it for several weeks, I was quite pleased with the lack of difficulty. So I did appreciate that. In any case, so as I do right after the reading of the paper, I go over some of those times change people don't moments that I talked about at the beginning. Again, these aren't the only ones that are there. I'm sure there are others. If you found one that I didn't go over, or you feel that the ones that I found really don't apply, by all means, give me your feedback. I welcome it. Dave@AmericanCyanide.com. If you're listening to the podcast on Breaker, as a matter of fact, on Breaker, you can leave comments directly on there, and we can discuss it. You can also follow me on CloudHub and talk to me there. You can also follow me on Parler. My handle on both for CloudHub and Parler is @AmericanCyanide. So my email, again, Dave@AmericanCyanide.com, CloudHub and Parler @AmericanCyanide. Follow me. You can subscribe to the podcast wherever you're listening to. If you're listening on Apple, obviously subscribe, rate it, whatever. Like I said, Breaker, you can leave comments as well. I don't use Apple at all. So if you're listening on Apple and you're leaving me comments there, I ain't going to know about it, to be honest with you. I might see the rating. I don't know. But I'm very anti-Apple. In any case, let's talk about Federalist number 9 and the times change people don't moments. The first one that I came across was actually pretty much the first line. A firm union will be of the utmost moment to the peace and liberty of the states as a barrier against domestic faction and insurrection. Now, as you're well aware, and if you're not, you've been living under a rock, the corrupt Democrats have accused us conservatives of inciting an insurrection on January 6th. This is patently false. Conservatives did not incite an insurrection. As a matter of fact, an insurrection did not occur on January 6th. At worst, it was a riot. Now, yes, some people got hurt, and sadly, yes, some people died that day. One young lady was shot. She was unarmed, and she was shot, supposedly, by a Capitol Hill police officer. It was not an insurrection. People went into the Capitol. They were unarmed. They barely destroyed anything. One woman got shot. A couple people died of strokes or heart attacks. It had nothing to do with the riots. They weren't even inside the Capitol. They were outside. It wasn't an insurrection, but leave it to the Democrats to exaggerate, just like they always do, exaggerate situations and make them far worse than they actually are. This is primarily the reason why we are in such a mess as we are with this whole Wuhan virus pandemic thing. It's been over a year now. And again, if you missed it, Joe Biden is talking about, who's the quote president, unquote, talking about, well, if you're vaccinated, maybe you can have 4th of July parties. Screw you, Joe. Screw you. Sorry. No, we've been dealing with this for over a year. It's endemic at this point. Okay. You're either going to catch, and I've been saying this from the beginning. If you listen to my other episodes before I started reading the Federalist Papers, I talked about the Wuhan virus back when it started. And I said this then, and I will repeat it now. You're either going to get the virus or you're not. You're either going to get sick or you're not. You're either going to get over it or you're not. That's life. And it does no good living in fear constantly, wearing the masks, wanting to be in lockdowns, shutting down businesses because you're scared, not wanting to send your children to school because you're scared. Teachers not wanting to teach because they're scared. We need to stop living in fear. This is where the union, a firm union, will be of the utmost moment to the peace and liberty of the states as a barrier against domestic faction and insurrection. We need a firm union. We need leadership. We need unity. Joe Biden claims that he's all about unity, yet the first thing he does is sign executive orders that divide us. Another times change people don't moment is this phrase. Such an infatuated policy, such a desperate expedient, might, by the multiplication of petty offices, answer the views of men who possess not qualifications to extend their influence beyond the narrow circles of personal intrigue, but it could never promote the greatness or happiness of the people of America. What he's talking about there is there were people back then that were, when they were talking about how to form the United States or what to do after winning independence from England, they were talking about actually splitting up the existing colonies into even smaller units. What Alexander Hamilton is saying here is that those people have little to no influence at all. They don't have any power. They don't have any ability to lead outside of a small circle, which is why they want smaller units of government. And smaller states, basically, so that these people that are basically the Romneys and the McCloskeys Susan Collinses of the period, of the time, so that those petty people could have more power. That's the only reason why they wanted to divide it, because otherwise they would be insignificant, because they wouldn't be statesmen. They would have little to no influence in the ability to run the state. Times change, people don't. We have people like that today. The aforementioned people that I listed, Romney, Susan Collins, all these cretins that basically stabbed America in the back on January 6th when they certified the fraudulent election. It was up to Congress to finally stand up for the Constitution, and they chose not to. They basically told the rest of the world that the United States Constitution is not, it was basically written on toilet paper, and that's all it's good for. That's what the court said about the election results, and that's what Congress said about the election results. The Constitution didn't matter. We have petty people in office right now, and we need to primary these people out. We got to get the Republicans out that stabbed America in the back, because they're no good. They're no good for their constituents. They're no good for the country. We're going to primary each and every single one of those out, and we're going to put in America First conservatives. That needs to be our priority, because we cannot have petty people who possess not qualifications to extend their influence beyond the narrow circles of personal intrigue. We cannot have those people in our government anymore. And then finally, the last passage that I have. I have thought it proper to quote at length these interesting passages because they contain a luminous abridgment of the principal arguments in favor of the Union. It must effectually remove the false impressions which a misapplication of other parts of the work was calculated to make. This is where Hamilton is saying that the opposition to the federal to forming the Union misquoted or took portions of Montesquieu's work out of context in order to support their argument. So that long quote that he did, you know, where he's talking about, let me give you an example, so just to refresh your memory. It's where it starts. It is very probable that mankind would have been obliged at length to blah, blah, blah. This form of government is a convention by which several smaller states agree to become members of a larger one, a republic of this kind able to withstand an external force. You know, that long quote that he did, that's where the actual support for what Hamilton, John Jay, James Madison, and others who were in support of the Constitution, were in support of a federal government. Montesquieu actually was in support of such a thing. Now, at the time that Montesquieu wrote that, Montesquieu wasn't a contemporary of theirs. He was like 100, 150 years prior to them. So Alexander makes the point, look, we have come a long way in political sciences and in theory. So what Montesquieu was arguing back then may not necessarily be applicable today. We have figured out how to do these things. We're going to set up a Senate to represent the states, give every state an equal vote. We have a House, which, you know, obviously is going to be by population. We're separating the powers, and we're having checks, and we're making it check each other. He's basically giving a preview of what the Constitution is going to be. You know, Article 1, 2, and 3, checks and balances, all that stuff. So Hamilton did a very good job in Federalist 9 explaining why it's important to be united, why it's important to have one federal government. Now, from what I understand, Federalist 10 is awesome. It was written by James Madison, and I will be getting to that one. I'm actually excited about reading it. I haven't read it yet. Again, if you go back to Federalist 1, I've never read the Federalist Papers, never. And when I record them, that's usually about the first time that I've actually read them. You know, so this is basically my first reaction, my first honest reaction to the papers. Oh, good gracious. I am rambling and rambling on. I just noticed how long I've been talking here at the close. If you listen to my previous episodes, I never really go this long. But again, there was some important stuff that I said in there at the close, so that had to be said. So anyway, let me know what you think. Again, you can send me a comment if you're listening on Breaker. If you want to follow me on CloudHub or Parler, my handle is @AmericanCyanide. You can shoot me an email, dave@AmericanCyanide.com, and give me your feedback there as well. And, you know, obviously, probably the feedback I'm going to be getting is, you talk too much. I get it. I do. I really do. But, you know, I get excited sometimes about a particular topic, and I just want to, you know, yak. So I'm a truck driver. I'm alone for weeks, dudes and dudettes. So this is one of the occasions that I get to talk to people. I record videos as well. If you want to subscribe to my video channel on Rumble, rumble.com, /AmericanCyanide, or just, you know, or search for the American Cyanide Show. And I have some videos on there that, you know, of different topics of other things that I talk about. So anyway, I have kept you way too long. I always feel bad about my episodes getting too long. So I will let you go. I want to thank you very much for listening, and thank you very much for staying all the way to the end here. Thank you, thank you, thank you so much for your patience. As always, remember, America is worth fighting for. Be strong, be blessed, be still and know.